Tonight we talk about Tonglam. Say Tonglam. I'll spell it. Say again, Tonglam. Tonglam is the direct perception of emptiness. Okay, this is the stage at which you see emptiness directly. Tong means to see, and Lam means path. So it's called the path of seeing. Then I ask that no one interrupt tonight, okay? No one ask any questions, all right? Just listen. Please don't interrupt tonight, okay? I thought to go through the what happens when you see path of seeing, okay? How what happens to, in the period just before that, and what happens during it, and then what happens just after that. So we're going to talk about Tonglam in that way tonight. Say, Soso, Kewo, Soso, Kewo, Pakpa, Pakpa. Okay. According to Buddhism, your mind is beginningless. You can't point to a time when you're when your mind started. Any point in the past history of your own mind that you can pinpoint must have been produced by an instant of mind the moment before that. Ergo, therefore, there's no beginning to your mind. You cannot find a starting point to the mind because it takes mind to create mind. There must have been a mind the moment before any given moment of your mind. There has to be a mind at 2 o'clock for there to be a mind at 3 o'clock. And if there's a mind at 2 o'clock, there must have been a mind at 1 o'clock. Nothing can create mind except another instance of your own mind. Therefore, your mind is beginningless. It happens also to be endless. Okay, and I won't go into the reasons why. But you can, I like to say you can think of your mind as one long spaghetti noodle that never had a beginning and isn't going to have an end. So your lifetimes have been infinite. Your past lives are infinite. Your future lives are numbered until you become a Buddha, and then you finish the process of rebirth, but your mind still goes on forever. In that whole spaghetti noodle of the mind, so imagine it going on for infinity. You only see emptiness directly for the first time once. It's like a major, it is the border between the left side and the right side of that spaghetti noodle, you know. That's the big event of a mind in the universe, is when you see emptiness directly. That is the border between all living beings. You've either seen emptiness directly or you haven't. I like to say it's like virginity in this life, you know. You only lose it once. Up to that point, you're in one condition, and after that point, you're in a different condition. And you can't say, I had it twice or three times or something like that. You know, you're either one or the other. Absolutely, you're either one or the other. And all living beings in the universe are either have either seen emptiness directly or they haven't. The first type, the type that haven't seen emptiness, we call Soso Kyo. Say Soso Kyo. Soso Kyo. Soso means ordinary. Kyo means person. Okay? Soso Kyo means ordinary person. You're an ordinary suffering being. Soso Kyo. You haven't seen emptiness directly yet for the first time. Okay? And then if you have seen emptiness directly, you're called Pakpa. Say Pakpa. Pakpa. So all beings in the universe are either Soso Kyo or Pakpa. The Sanskrit word for Pakpa is Arya. Don't confuse it with Arhat. I used to. That's a different thing. Okay, that's someone who's reached Nirvana. Okay, which comes much later. Arya is a person who has seen emptiness directly. The word Pakpa means superior. So Hitler was right when he called them Aryas. Okay, terrible. Terribly evil meaning that he put on it. So forget that one, okay? It does mean totally different, totally exalted type of being, completely different from a social kill. Once you've seen emptiness directly, you're just absolutely and totally and forever different from a social kill. Okay. So that you have to get in mind that there's only two kinds of beings. Buddhas, by the way, are pakpa. You don't lose it when you become a Buddha. You're still a pakpa. Okay. I want to talk about the final moments just before you reach the path of seeing. Okay. What's path number two? It's called Jorlam, like path of preparation. And what it means is you're preparing to see emptiness directly. At Jorlam, which is path number two of the five paths, you are getting intellectual understandings of emptiness. Okay? You are starting to understand or grasp what emptiness is. Okay? There's a very important stage of Jorlam called Chuchok. Chuchok means dharma or thing. Okay. Chok means ultimate or supreme. The highest thing. Okay. Is it the highest thing? No. You're only on the end of the second path. Okay. Chuchok in this case refers to the very peak moment of a person who is still a soso kewa. So kewa. Alright? Chichok is that. I want to describe what happens at Chichok. Okay? First of all, you must have been under a spiritual course of study for some time. We would say that in your past life, you had been under a spiritual guide and in a course of spiritual study for thousands or possibly millions of years. Okay, now, your mind has been prepared. You have been in the presence of a holy teacher, and they have been setting you up for this moment for perhaps thousands or millions of years. Okay, in your past life, in this life, you've met a real spiritual guide. You've been with them, and as I mentioned the other day, very importantly, you've been serving them properly. You know, you've been serving them their needs and getting, therefore, karmically, exactly what you need from them. That's the way it works. It's a give and take. You've been serving them with everything you could give them, and mostly in devotion. And then they've been teaching you. And you've been going through a course in three stages. First one, is called Chujungi Shiram. Say Chujung Shiram. Chujungi Shiram. That's classroom hours, okay? Just hours of hearing. Chujung means study, hearing, which means studying, and Sherab means wisdom. Okay, so it's the wisdom you get from being in hours of classroom study with your Lama. Okay. Then the second is Samchung. Say Samchungi. Sherab. Samchungi. Sherab. That's contemplation. You've been thinking about it. You've been working on it in your own mind. Samchungi Shiram. The wisdom that comes from contemplation. And it grows from the first wisdom. Then the final is Gomchung. Say Gomchungi Shiram. Gomchungi Shiram. That's meditation, wisdom. Wisdom you get from deep meditation. And you've been in this process. For a long time. Something triggers that day. Something triggers the Chuchok. Okay, Chuchok is the final moments of the path of preparation. Something in your intellectual understanding of emptiness triggers Chuchok, triggers the process. Very typically, it's a subject we call Chichadan. Say Chi?
Chichadan.
Chi?
Chichadan.
Chi means quality. Like car. Okay? A quality like car. Don't say a quality like car. Okay? And we're getting into a point where I can't explain too much, okay? You have to just think, okay? It has to come from your side, okay? Quality, for example, car. Cheda means characteristic. For example, Chevrolet. And you have to think about the relationship between what we call car and what we call Chevrolet. Okay? If you have Chevrolet, you have car. Now I'm going to four kinds of chi. Okay? Four kinds of chi. Car is a quality. Chevrolet is characteristic of that quality. And you have to think about that. Okay? It's very difficult. It's very profound. There's something happening there. I'll give you some clues. Okay? We'll talk about the four kinds of cheese. The first two are not too relevant, okay? But I might as well give you all the kinds of cheese. The second two are ultimately relevant. Okay? I should say the first is not too relevant. Nice elephant. Relevant, and the last two really are relevant, okay? I should put it that way. Say Tokchi.
Tokchi.
In this case, chi means like the overall whole. Tok means the collection of the parts. So an example of it, and this is normally physical. In fact, it's always physical. Okay. Tokchi means, for example, this pen is the Tokchi of all the atoms that make up the pen. So you can say it's a whole or a general in the sense of being the sum of its parts. And tok chi means the sum of its parts, okay? The whole of the parts. So in this case, chi means the whole pen, and tok means the separate atoms that are making up the pen. That's called a tok chi. You start to get the flavor of what a chi is. So in this case, it's the whole which is composed of the parts. Physically, that's a tokchi. Say rikchi.
Rikchi.
Rik means type or class. And chi means, again, here it refers to quality. Rikchi is car. Car is an example of rikchi. Okay. The definition of a rikchi is something that has a lot of things that are characteristic of that quality, which are, in the case of car, what? Chevrolet, Ford, Toyota. Okay, those are called chedot. Those are sometimes called like types of the general, examples of the general type. So rikchi means the general type, or more correctly, if you think about it carefully, quality. Okay. Quality. Say Dachi.
Dachi.
Da means sound. Da means sound or name. Shabda. Sound or name. Chi means a general. Okay? General. And what this refers to, this chi means general. Okay? What this chi means is I'll use the example my Lama always used, okay? It's kind of a terrible example. Mao Zedong, okay? Mao Zedong. You know the sound. You know the da. You know the name, Mao Zedong, okay? And when I say that name, or when I say, if you've never been to Paris, when I say Eiffel Tower, okay? Suppose you've never been to Paris. You've never seen the, you've never experienced the Eiffel Tower directly. And I say, Eiffel Tower. And the minute I say that, you do get some kind of understanding, even if you've never been to Paris. Some kind of image forms in your mind. That's a dachi. Okay? It's a chi in the mind, a mental image drawn from the name Eiffel Tower, even though you've never seen it yourself directly. Okay? That's a dachi. Say, dunji.
Dunji.
Dun means meaning, but here it means the object itself, as opposed to the name of the object. Okay? Dun. The real thing. The Eiffel Tower itself that you see when you're standing there in front of it. Okay? That's dun. Eiffel Tower is the dun. Qi means a mental image. Okay? Why are we talking about these qis? The most important one, the crucial one here is dun qi. Say dun qi.
Dun qi.
And I'll give you the possible scenario. Okay? You've been studying really hard. You've been doing really good guru yoga in this life and in fact for many lives. And you're standing at the stove making a cup of tea for your lama, for example. And it's in the morning. Say like 8 o'clock. And you've put the water on the stove in a aluminum pan. And you're standing there, you've just been studying Shichedan for like a week or something. And you've been thinking about it really hard. And you've been meditating about it really hard. And you're standing there, and you suddenly realize that you are not seeing a pot. Okay? You suddenly realize that you're not looking at a pot. You suddenly realize that you are looking at a dunji of a pot. Okay? You are looking at a dunji of a pot. You are not looking at a pot. You are looking at a mental image of a pot. Okay? You always thought you were looking at a pot. For your whole life you thought you were looking at a pot. And suddenly, under the influence of all these factors, serving your lama, studying hard, you know, praying for blessing of lama, all these things, lama's helping you your whole life, secretly, known or unknown, you know, all around you. And then suddenly this happens. You realize you're not looking at a pot, and you never have been looking at a pot. You're looking at the dunji of a pot. Okay. Then you check what's going on. What does that mean? You know, and you realize that the only thing you ever see of a pot is a few clues from the front of the pot. But maybe a good translation for tema, okay? Meaning indication. Tenma. All you ever see is a few clues. You see some silver flash on the right side. You see a little bit of curve on the left side. You see this black straight thing sticking out the side. Maybe you don't see more than 4 or 5 clues. You definitely never see the back of the pot. For all you know, they're all just cardboard things, you know. And in your mind, you make a pot. Based on those clues, in your own mind, you make an image of a pot. And you call it pot. Okay, that mental image, which is a projection based on a number of parts that have come together because your eye went ding, 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 square, round, white, flash, black stick, pot. And your mind is creating the image of a pot. Your mind, due to previous circumstances, due to millions of years of karma, is thinking, is seeing it as pot. If there was a being from another realm in that room, they would not see pot. Okay. They might see the same colors and shapes. They would synthesize it in a different way. If a preta, for example, was in the room, they might see a bowling ball about to hit me in the head or something. Okay? They might have a totally different synthesis of the same data. And rightly so for them. They're not crazy. Okay? Their perception is as correct as yours. But we'll talk about that later. So you're synthesizing pot, and at the chucho, at the final moment of the path of preparation, you realize, I'm not looking at a pot, and I never was. I'm looking at my own mental image of a pot. Okay. You have just perceived what? Is that emptiness? No. You have just perceived the truth of dependent origination. For the first time in a countless years, you finally figured out what you've been doing all this time. You do see dependent origination. what depenetration is, I should say, right? Because all around you, every object around you is dependent origination. Every object in your normal experience is what we call disruptive reality. Okay. It's been around you all along. You've never seen any other kind of object except things that are dependent origination. That's your whole world, is those projections. And you've been living in that. So that's Chichong. That's a very, very important stage. Extremely important. Okay. You finish making the tea, take it up to your lama, and go to the temple to do your prayers. To do your morning meditations. And you get into a good meditation posture, and you enter what's called Nyamshat. Say Nyamshat?
Nyamshat?
Nyamshat. Nyamshat means deep meditation. Okay. Deep meditation. Say Thamten? Thamba? Nyendo. Thamten? Thamba? Nyendo. We are living in the desire realm. But at this point, your meditation is going so deep that your mind, not your body, but your mind, leaves the form realm, leaves the desire realm, and enters what we call Samten Dhammo. Samten Dhammo means the first samadhi level. Okay? It corresponds to something in the form realm. Okay? What I'm trying to say is that your mind is actually in a different realm. It's in a totally different area of the universe. Okay? And that your meditation is so deep that your mind has reached that place. This is the, and by the way, that it's the opening stages of that level, and that's called Nyendo. Okay, Nyendo means opening stages of the first samadhi. Okay. It's not what we call the main event. It's just before that. called Nyendo. This is the platform, this is the unique platform from which you see emptiness directly. Your mind must be in this samadhi to see emptiness directly. If you haven't been practicing meditation on a very, very regular basis, and I say 1 to 2 hours per day, in the meditation part, not the getting ready and thinking about your breakfast and doing the water bowls, that don't count, okay? I'm talking 1 or 2 hours in meditation. If you haven't been doing that on a regular basis, you can't reach Samten Dhammo Nyendo. You'll never get there. You cannot reach that platform. If you never reach that platform, it's completely impossible for you to see emptiness directly. Okay, so that's the bottom line, as my boss would say. you gotta be able to get there. Okay? You have to be able to put your mind in that state. What it means is a very, very deep state of meditation where, in particular, none of the 5 sense objects can appear to you at that moment. You can't smell anything. You can't taste anything. You can't hear anything. You obviously can't see anything. You can't feel any physical, tangible objects. Your mind is in a total deep meditation at that level. Okay. Then due to the influence of all those other things, study, contemplation, meditation, scripture training, good teaching from a real lama, serving that lama, getting back the blessing from that lama, having the blessing throughout your life of many lamas and through many lives, you go into the direct perception of emptiness. What's it like? How long does it last? It lasts maybe 15, 20 minutes, first time. Okay. Can you be aware that you're seeing emptiness? You're not. Okay. You cannot have the thought, I'm seeing emptiness. Okay. Because I is what? I is another dependent origination. I is another deceptive reality. The minute you think I, you're using a dirty again. You're using a mental image again. Okay? So you can't even think, I'm seeing it. Or, hey, I finally did it. No, you cannot have that thought. It's pure chula chushapa. Say chula chushapa. Chula chushapa. Water poured in water. Okay. Water poured into a glass of water. The glass, you have a bucket of water and you pour water in it. What that means is, during that 15 or 20 minutes, you cannot draw the distinction between you and what you're seeing. It's impossible. You can't. You cannot draw a distinction between the subject and the object. Impossible. Okay, because the subject is deceptive reality, what we call non-conventional reality, and the object is ultimate reality. So you cannot draw a distinction because you cannot, at that moment, perceive anything which is not ultimate reality. The only thing that presents itself to your mental consciousness, and all the other five are shut down, is emptiness, pure emptiness, is ultimate reality. You cannot perceive anything else, because nothing else is appearing to your mind at that moment. Okay? Nothing else. So in that sense, there's what we call non-duality. Okay? I tell you to be very careful with that word. Okay? Be extremely careful with that word. The ultimate meaning is that during the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot draw a distinction between the subject and the object, simply because the subject ain't ultimate reality. It ain't emptiness. And all that's presenting itself to your mind and all you can see at that moment is emptiness, ultimate reality. If you were aware of subject and object at that moment, you couldn't be seeing ultimate reality, because the subject, which is mind, is never ultimate reality. It's a deceptive reality. It's a plain old object that you have to see through a dunchi, through some kind of mental image. Okay? You can't have that awareness of subject and object at that point. Okay? That's what non-duality really means. It doesn't mean, repeat, okay? Doesn't mean that somehow all the subjects and objects in the world are the same. Forget it. Stupid. Okay? Doesn't mean that. And it would be no great achievement to blur the distinction between subject and object through taking some heroin or something, you know? That's not reaching a non-dual state or something like that. Okay? Subjects and objects are totally separate. The Buddha's mind and everything that the Buddha's mind perceives are totally separate. Subject and object, even the word for existence in Tibetan is yul, object. And the mind is yul jin, the subject. And they are completely separate, and they don't... Seeing emptiness is not the process of somehow getting yourself to blend into the world or something like that. Nothing like that. It's not what it means at all. Okay. So what does non-duality mean? In one sense, it means that during the direct perception of emptiness, you cannot be aware of the distinction between the subject and object, simply because one of them is not ultimate reality. It's not emptiness, it's you. And you ain't emptiness. Emptiness is a different thing. Okay. The second meaning of non-duality is that in one sense, all objects and all subjects are totally equivalent. Okay? In one very special sense, all the subject minds in the world and all the objects which those minds are perceiving are totally equivalent. They share one quality which is exactly the same. From one specific point of view, they are totally the same. What is it? They're empty. Okay? They're empty. All minds and all objects of those minds are totally equal in that they are empty. That is, they never were anything except your projection. They never were anything except your projection. That can be said of every subject mind, and it can be said of every object in the universe, that they are totally equal in being anything but not your projection. Okay? All right? That's the two meanings of non-duality. Nothing to do with somehow, you know, golden light and you melt into the object and stay there for a while and then come back. Something doesn't mean that at all.
Okay.
The experience goes on 15-20 minutes. You're not aware of the passage of time because that's not emptiness. That's also a relative object. You cannot be aware of the passage of time. You are there and you are in the pure, direct awareness of emptiness, and that's all. You're not aware of the passage of time. Okay. Then the direct perception of emptiness is over. That state of mind that you have during that period, during that 15-20 minutes, is called Nyamsha Gyeshe. Say Nyamsha Gyeshe. Nyamsha Gyeshe. You can divide roughly, you can divide the experience of perceiving emptiness directly, the path of seeing, into two parts. Okay? The first part is called Nyamsha Gyeshe. Yeshe. Cool. I like it. Sometimes my lama goes, and everybody goes, Yamsha means deep meditation. Yeshe means wisdom. Okay? Knowledge. Okay? Yamsha Yeshe is your state of mind during those 15-20 minutes. Okay? That's called knowledge during deep meditation as a part of the path of seeing. The first half of the path of seeing. And that's all I can say about it. There ain't nothing else to say about it. There ain't nothing else to describe. That's all it is. There's nothing else you can say, anyone can ever say about it. That's what they mean when they say judu merpa. Judu merpa. When they say emptiness is indescribable. Okay, that you cannot convey to another person that the quality of that emptiness at that moment. You cannot describe it to another person. Okay? It's nothing physical. You can't describe it in terms of something physical. There's a joke in the monastery that one kid in the debate ground in Lhasa in 1950-something ran in and said, I've seen emptiness. You know? Everybody says, well, what's it like? He says, well, it's a little green. And it has some yellow in it. You know? Impossible. You cannot see a color at that moment. If it had a color, it would be deceptive reality. It would be lower reality. It wouldn't be that higher reality called ultimate truth. Can't describe it. Colorless, shapeless, clear, invisible to other eyes, except for the Nyamsha Yeshe of an Arya. Okay. And that's all you can say about it. Then you come down, and there's a physical sensation of descending from the Samten Dhammo, from the first meditation level. You feel, you have a sensation of descending out of that meditation. Okay. And you enter a thing called say, Jetop Nyeshe. Jetop Nyeshe. Je means after. Top means the one you get. Nyeshe means knowledge. Okay. So it means the knowledge you get right after you saw emptiness directly. Okay? Are you still on the path of seeing? Yes. This is the second stage of two stages. This is the second half of the path of seeing. Are you still seeing emptiness directly? No. Okay. During this period, which will last for the rest of the day, essentially, if you saw emptiness in the morning, this experience, these experiences of Jetop Yeshe would last the rest of the day until you went to sleep. Okay? So if you saw emptiness in mid-morning, this experience would continue until the end of the day, Jetop Yeshe. And during this period, you have dozens of important spiritual realizations that you could have never had before. Okay? Dozens of deep realizations come to you, which you could never have had without seeing emptiness directly. Okay, things are happening to you that day that never happened before and could not have happened before because you hadn't seen emptiness yet. Okay, those events and those experiences and those realizations can be grouped into four parts, four groups. Se parte, demba. Parpe, Yama. Si. Papa means what? Arya. Okay? Papa means Arya. Someone who has seen emptiness directly. By the way, see, of course, is metaphorical. You don't do this with your eyeballs. Okay? So Papa means Arya. Dhamma means truth. Okay? And four means, she means four. Okay? She means four. She means number four. The four. Truth. Yes. And this poor word was abused by earlier translators. And they called it the Four Noble Truths. Okay? Because Arya means noble sometimes. It should have been called the Four Arya Truths. Okay? So this means the Four Arya Truths. Meaning four categories or four groups of things which someone who has just become an Arya now understands directly. Okay? To be true. Okay? You can group all the realizations that you have during the following 12 hours or whatever as grouping into one of these four Arya truths. Things that only a person who has just seen emptiness can understand directly. Okay? Can see directly. And that's why they're called the four Arya truths. Okay, the four Arya truths. The four Papa truths. Okay. I like to call Arya a realized being. I like to call an Arya a realized being. Realized in the sense of they understood emptiness directly, not omniscient yet. Okay? Not realized in the sense of omniscient, but realized in the sense of they have realized emptiness. Okay. I'll give you the four truths and then we'll take a break. It's hot. This is extremely important. So I want you to be fresh. Sorry it's so hot. Say Dunya. Dhamma. Dunya. Dhamma. Dunya means suffering. Dunya means suffering. Dhamma means the Arya truth of suffering. Okay. During the period following your first direct perception of emptiness, you truly understand what suffering is. For the first time, you truly understand how much suffering there is. Okay. Is this 10 Dunyal Dhamma? And you can answer by asking me, is it samsara? Is it a piece of samsara? It is. This 10 is Dunyal Dhamma. Okay. Your body is Dunyal Dhamma. Boulder Creek is Dunyal Dhamma. United States is Dunyal Dhamma. Almost every thought you can have is Dunyal Dhamma. All your relationships are Dunyal Dhamma. Unless they're especially spiritual, okay? Seriously, okay? That's Dunyal Dhamma. Okay? We'll talk more about it. The Arya truth of suffering. That person sees the true extent of suffering for the first time. Okay. Say Kunjung Dhamma. Kunjung Dhamma. Kunjung means the source of suffering. Okay? Kunjung means the source of suffering. Dhamma means truth. So in the 8 or 10 hours following the direct perception of emptiness, that baby Arya, newfangled Arya, truly understands what's causing all this suffering. Okay? That Arya, for the first time, truly understands where all this suffering is coming from. Mm-hmm. Is this 10 Kunjung Dhamma? There's a huge debate in the scriptures, but basically, anything which is Dunyal Dhamma is also Kunjung Dhamma. Very interesting. Don't think of Dhamma as truth. Think of it as Dhamma in the sense of a fact. And this is one of the facts of suffering, and it is one of the facts of the source of suffering. This pen is Dunyal Dhamma, and this pen is Kunjung Dhamma. Don't think of it as some principle. You know, truth is a misnomer. It means actual fact, the reality of suffering. Think of it as the reality of suffering. It's not like all true or false, not like that, not like a principle. This is the truth of suffering, and it is the truth of the source of suffering.
The pen is both. Your head is both. Your mind is both. Your ears are both. Boulder Creek is both.
Okay.
Hang with me, okay? It's terrible to have a teaching on emptiness when it's humid in your heart. It's really like Mara entered the room. You know, it's extremely hard to think about these things when you're uncomfortable, and it's particularly when you're hot and you just had a nice dinner at Vajivani. Okay, so try to focus. Okay, say Gogden.
Gogden.
Gogden means the truth of the end of suffering. Okay? The truth of the end of suffering. That brand new Arya, during that 10 hours of Jaitop Yeshi, the knowledge which comes in the aftermath of seeing emptiness directly, during that period, has all these realizations relating to the end of suffering. They see the end of suffering directly. They know the end of suffering directly. Have they reached it? No. They got a long way to go. They got all that fourth path to go. That we talk about some other day.
Okay.
But at least they see it. They know when the end is going to be. And they know what it's going to be like. And I'll talk about it later, okay? Gokden. Say Lamden.
Lamden.
Lam means path. Den means truth. And this is the fact of the path to get out of, to reach the end, okay? The path to reach the end. The truth of the path that gets you to the end. Okay? The truth of the path that gets you to the end. And this new Arya understands how he's going to get out. Perfectly. Directly. He knows exactly what he must do to get out. He knows. He knows the process that he's going to go through. That's called Lamden. He perceives Lamden directly. Next we'll talk about some of the specific realizations that fall into these four categories, okay? But first take a break. Really try to refresh yourselves, okay? And come back all gung-ho, okay? Okay, guys, ready? Ready. We'll go over this, I might leave some out, okay? But we'll go over a number of the experiences that happen to a person during Jaitop Yeshe, during that period following, in the next 10 hours or so, say. Some of them occur while you're still sitting in meditation, and some of them occur while you're walking around afterwards. Okay. You have a direct awareness of your death. Okay. You have a direct awareness of your coming death. You know, you can do death meditation from the Lam Rim, and you can study about death, and you can work on it in retreat for months and months and years and years. But during that day, you have a direct, they call Ngepa, which means a direct ascertainment of your death. You are truly perceive your coming death. And for the first time, you really believe it. All the other ones I like, if you get very good at death meditation, you might start to approach this state and start to act on it. You know, you start stopping to waste your time if you're doing it the Lam Rim very well. But you never have what this is. This is Pakpe Denpa. Denpa meaning they see it directly. They have a direct awareness of their coming death. And they act on that for the rest of their life. But they don't waste time. And they know they're going to die. They see the death directly.
Okay.
During much of the following 10 or 12 hours, you can read other people's minds for the first time.
Okay.
You can actually perceive directly their thoughts. For example, you could be at a car dealer. Seriously. And I'm not dissing car dealers, but I'm giving an example. And you could be trying to sell a car to that guy in a rush because you need money that particular day. And you offer them a very nice red Thunderbird, which is worth maybe $2,000. And the guy, to him, you look spaced out. But things are happening on that day. And he decides in his mind that he could take advantage of you. And you read his thoughts. And you know he's about to lie to you, and then he lies to you. So, this is worth $200, you know. And
I'll give you $200 for it. And you can read those thoughts in his mind. You perceive the samsara in another person's mind directly. You can read his thoughts directly. For the first time ever, you can read another person's thoughts directly. Up until that point, really, you never know what someone else is thinking. For all you know, the guy next to you is a Buddha. You can't ever really tell. You can't ever really judge someone else. The Buddha said, anyone who's not like me should not judge other people. Meaning, if you can't read other people's minds, don't try judging people. You'll screw up. You'll fail. You never know what anyone else is thinking. You never know that the person next to you is not enlightened. But on this day, you can read other people's minds, and you're completely aware of the suffering that they're undergoing. You're completely aware of the jumble and the agony of another person's samsaric mind. You can read it. You can see it. Mm-hmm. Going on to the cause of suffering, the main cause is ignorance. And on this day, for the first time, coming out of that perception, you realize that was the first correct perception you ever had. Throughout your life, and we've talked about the finger snap, you have, in a minute, you have hundreds of perceptions. You have hundreds of mini perceptions. During the length of this talk, you're having tens of thousands of perceptions of the change in sound, the change in the heat of the room, the lighting, the colors, the shapes, your own thoughts. You're having tens of thousands of perceptions. Every single one of them, for the entire length of your life, has been incorrect. Okay. Mistaken. Another part of the truth of the cause of suffering, and something that you understand on that day, is that you have never undertaken an action except out of selfishness. Ultimately, every action you've ever performed, at its root, was a concern for yourself. Okay. You can be sitting in a puja, tatara, and reciting, and 99% of your mind is ultimately occupied with how do I look? How do I sound? Are other people aware that I've memorized a little bit of this text? Your whole day, your whole existence, up until that moment, is infected with thinking about yourself. That's not dangzin. Okay, that is not grasping to self-existence. That's a cause of this second thing. Ego, the presence of ego, and cherishing yourself, and never, even as I stand here describing it to you, I'm doing it. Okay, seriously, I'm not kidding. I am everything I say, everything I do, how I move, what I write, the reason I came to Vajrapani, everything is infected with the concern for myself and how I look to people. And will they like me? And thinking about myself. This is part of the disease that we all have. And you're never free of it. It's not grasping to self-existence that's the cause of this. This is a necessary result of that grasping. You are only concerned about yourself. You cannot, a normal human being cannot do a truly charitable act. You're always, even as you do good deeds, they're constantly infected by what is in it for me? How do I look to people? Are they aware what a good deed I'm doing? it's the human condition. And on that day, in that moment, it's depressing, I'm sorry. You perceive the truth of that. You live for that. You live for yourself. And relationships are the same way. And that's a subcategory of this particular dhimba, of this particular truth. You never engage in a relationship in samsara, unless you are getting something out of it. We're not capable of being selfless or unselfish in relationships. A person in samsara will not engage in a relationship unless they are profiting from it in some way. And I'm describing our communal condition. We all have that. It's a depressing fact that you perceive directly as on that day that you see emptiness directly. Okay. Here's the good part. This is called the kleshic side of the world. This is called the pure side of the world. Okay, they're actually divided that way. I think this may be the most pleasant experience of the whole day. Okay, you see your own enlightenment. and you know exactly how many lives it's going to take. I'm talking Mahayana chat. Okay. I'm assuming this is a bodhisattva. Okay. You perceive directly that you will become a Buddha, and you perceive exactly how many lives it could take. And seven is very typical. Okay. Seven is very typical. This is Jacob Yeshi, after the director session emptiness. During the day, you start in the morning and this is all happening during the day. Yeah, very typical. Yeah. Very typical that it would take seven more lifetimes to reach full enlightenment after you've seen emptiness directly. Very typical. Classic. Seven lives. You and I, in our current condition, if we haven't seen emptiness directly, cannot prove even the existence of a Buddha. You know, we are Buddhists. We are sitting in a Buddhist temple studying Buddhism. And you and I have no real proof of the existence of a Buddha. You know, we know there was some guy walking around India. We know he taught something. We have the books that he taught. We have tradition that came from him. We don't know that a Buddha even exists. We haven't had any direct confirmation of that. On that day, you realize you have seen a Buddha. You have met a Buddha. Specifically, the essence body of a Buddha, which is the essence of a Buddha. That's the real guts of a Buddha. The emptiness of the Buddha. The Dharmakaya. Okay. By seeing emptiness, you have seen the Dharmakaya of the Buddha. And you know you've met a Buddha. It's this, and the conceptualization at that moment is something like what you always thought it would be before you became a Buddhist, of meeting God. Okay? It is that experience. It's almost as you would have imagined it. You know, it's some kind of huge, clear, powerful energy, and you came into contact and you met it directly. You have now confirmed the existence of a Buddha. You met the Buddha. Okay. You met the Buddha. And you know you met the Buddha. And at that moment, by the way, you understand what the physical bodies of the Buddha are. Directly. Okay. I don't mean that you meet the physical bodies of the Buddha. But I mean that by meeting the Dharmakaya of the Buddha, and knowing that you've met the Dharmakaya of the Buddha, these things called tankas, you know, are something quite different to you now. You know, you realize that they represent what you saw, and they take on a totally different meaning. You know, then you can follow all that Lam Rim stuff about not dropping them on the floor and not sneezing on them and not. You know, you realize that this is a porthole to the Dharmakaya. This is representing. This is the physical evidence of the Dharmakaya. Somebody, somewhere, saw Tara. You know, think about it. I mean, it doesn't occur to you really until that moment. Somebody, somewhere, met Tara. And they painted her. And that's what she really looked like. And then somebody saw that tanka and copied it. And somebody saw that tanka and copied that tanka. And somebody saw that tanka and copied that tanka. But ultimately, if you go back, someone saw Tara. Someone had an experience of the Dharmakaya. So the pictures take on a completely different meaning for you. Totally different meaning for you. They are representing the highest object in the universe. And you know that now. You can't really know that until that day. You can't appreciate a painting of the Buddha until that day. Okay. You understand the meaning of prostration. Okay. You understand that if you ever bumped into a Dharmakaya, the immediate and natural reaction is to get down flat on the floor. Okay? And it's not any kind of Oriental custom or, you know, Asian thing or something like that. In the presence of the Buddha, especially the Dharmakaya. Knowing you have just met the Dharmakaya, you get slapped down on the floor. It's a natural reaction to that experience. Mm-hmm. You understand what it is to prostrate. And it's no longer some kind of a inconvenient, knee-hurting thing. You know, it becomes, you really understand why people get down flat on their face in the presence of that being. Mm-hmm. You understand prostration for the first time. Okay. Path. If you're on a bodhisattva track when all this happens, with the direct perception of emptiness, you achieve tonglen, path of seeing, you become an arya, pakpa, and thirdly, you reach the first bodhisattva bhumi. Okay? These are all simultaneous. At the first instant, the first microsecond of the direct perception of emptiness, you are already, three things have happened. You've entered the path of seeing, you become an arya, and if you have bodhicitta, you've reached the first bodhisattva bhumi. During Jetopyeshe, during the hours following that experience, you have a direct and powerful experience of real bodhicitta. And it's almost like a physical sensation of some kind of love and care for other beings coming out of your heart, like a river or like a clear light. And you know that you will spend the rest of your life serving sentient beings, you know. And you're sure about it. And you know what it will be like to serve them. And you know what you have to do to serve them. And you know that you always will from then on, from that moment on. By the way, during those seven lives, and while you're in the service of those beings, you will never again have any major problem in your life. You will always be comfortable. You will always be among the people of the world who in that planet at that time have the leisure to study Dharma. You know, have the teachers. You will always be surrounded by good teachers. You will always be surrounded by good parents. You will always go to a good school. You will always be charm. Your life will seem like a charm. Everything will go basically right. You'll still have to die in those lives. You'll still have to get old in those lives. But the life that you live, you see directly, will be on the whole quite cool. Okay. And you know that. You perceive that directly. It's not a joke. I mean, what could happen to you in the years following that experience is you could start to doubt the experience. You know, you could say, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't. Maybe I was just having a good day, you know. You know, maybe something happened, you know. You could start to doubt what happened. There's a certain tema. Tema means pramana. Pramana means indubitable perception. Undeniable perception. Absolutely, purely correct perception you have during Jetopyeshe that what just happened to you was absolutely true. It's like a confirmation realization about the event. What just happened to me is absolutely, purely true. What happens then is kind of interesting. You understand that every Buddhist scripture that was ever written is absolutely correct. And every detail of it is absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm kicking out the ones where people just lied and wrote something down. You know what I mean? Forget those, which happened. But the ones, the basic, the canon, especially the teachings of the Buddha, there's not a single syllable in them which is not absolutely true. And you cannot really confirm that until this moment. You have a direct, undeniable realization that every single page of the Buddhist scriptures, of the Lam Rim, and all the other books, is totally, absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And that this path is a true, is the true path. And I'm not being sectarian, okay? I'm just talking about an actual experience, which you can confirm yourself. And until that moment, you can't really confirm it. That this path is absolutely accurate, true, you can follow it, and you will absolutely get the same results. And all of these events will happen to you. You know, that's absolutely true. Then you get some kind of mania about protecting the books of Buddhism. You must preserve and protect those books. They must not disappear in this world. They are the AIDS vaccine for the mental affliction. They are the missing secret vaccine. They must be preserved in the world. You must devote your life to making sure that those books and the teachings that are connected to them are never lost in the world. And you get some kind of mania about it. You must try to protect them. They are all absolutely true. And they are really the only path out of suffering. You have realizations about the diamond that we talked about? And if you had a car and no other money, you might take it out and sell it to that guy and go buy a diamond and put it in the temple somewhere where maybe no one would ever find it. Doesn't matter. Because it represents what you saw. So there becomes something important about diamonds. What happens after that day? You know, so what are you going to do now? Try to think. I think you... Well, there are other realizations, but those are the main things. What happens next? You know, what are you supposed to do during those 7 lives? Do you see emptiness again? The 4th path is called what? Habituation. Some people call meditation, it's a mistranslation of the word gom. Gom, without the head letter and without the, with more aspiration, means to be accustomed to something, to get used to something. So it means path of habituation. The 4th path is... God bless. The 4th path is about 7.5 lifetimes of using what you saw and using these realizations to wipe out, to clean out the rest of your mental affliction. Okay. The 4th path of habituation is that long, long process of using, getting used to what happened. It takes 7.5 lifetimes to get used to what happened totally. Okay? And to utilize that knowledge in your day-to-day life to stop your mental affliction. Okay? And we talked about the boss. I mean, that's the guts of it. That's the essence of it. It's that process of what goes on as the boss screams at you. And you use the emptiness perception. Yeah. We'll talk about it. So Komlam is that. You are getting used to what happened in the sense that you are applying it to your day-to-day life to wipe out your mental afflictions. They say you do see emptiness again during Komlam. Okay? You do have other experiences of emptiness during Komlam. Direct experiences. Gomam is path number 4, path of habituation. Okay. Do you remember what happened in the other lifetime? Not as a child, not as an infant, not as a child. Okay. You don't remember what happened. As I understand it, as I've been taught about it, you go up like the Dalai Lama. You have the 2 greatest scholars of Tibet are your babysitters. Shijin Rinpoche and Ling Rinpoche, you know. And you grow up in these circumstances. You are constantly surrounded by the holiest teachers in the world of that time. And you are blessed by very, very moral, fine parents, and everything is perfect. The conditions for Dharma practice are absolutely perfect for the next 7 lives. And at a very early age, Bachak Sepa. Say Bachak Sepa. Bachak Sepa. The realizations of your past life reassert themselves. Bachak means mental seed or mental propensity. Sepa means it becomes manifest. It flowers. At a very early age, you start to have these realizations again. At a very early age, you start to manifest a knowledge of all these things again. It doesn't take you long to get back on track. You go through the infancy and you go through the childhood, and then by, at a very early age, you are already understanding these things. It's like the life stories of Tsongkhapa and things like that. I wouldn't say 4 years old, but I would say maybe 10 or 10 to 15 like that. Mm-hmm. If you keep that up, if you get rid of your mental afflictions, then you reach nirvana, of course. And then if you keep going, you do reach enlightenment. You know that and you reach it. And that's the process of what goes on after you perceive emptiness directly. But the date that you see it, the hour that you see it, your future becomes predictable. We call lung temba. You know, we can then say, okay, you're on your way out. You are definitely on your way out. Within a fixed amount of time, you will become a Buddha. On your way out, on the way means Gyunshupa. Say Gyunshupa. Gyunshupa. Stream enterer. Okay, that's another thing that happens when you see emptiness directly. You become what we call a stream enterer. Because you are on your way out. You are really on your way out in a definable amount of time. And that happens at the same moment. After you perceive emptiness directly and have these experiences of Jetho Vyeshi, in the aftermath of that, a couple of other things happen. What about doubt? Suppose some dude comes up to you and says, hey, Buddhism is not the way. You know, there's no such thing as a Buddha. It's a little bit mistaken. You know, there's no such thing as nirvana. Karma doesn't exist. And you'll say, what I'm saying is that you can never doubt Buddhism again. Impossible. Totally, purely impossible that you could ever be shaken out of this realization by anybody, anytime, anyway. You met the Buddha. Maybe as a tiny kid you might say something, but once the Bhakti-sepa, you would never have doubt. I'd have to say you don't have doubt at any period after that. It's a tongbang. It's permanently eliminated by the path of seeing. Cannot doubt Buddhism ever again. Impossible. You can never again believe that what you see exists the way you thought it did. Okay. And what I mean to say is you can never again entertain an intellectual belief in self-existence. Ever again. Okay. You can never again believe that things are not empty. You can never again believe that things are not your projections. Impossible. So we call jikta. Say jikta?
Kunta.
Jikta? Kunta. Jikta is the tendency to see you and yours, me and mine, as self-existent. Jikta is the tendency to see me and mine as self-existent. It has two flavors. First one is intellectual. Second one is inherent. Okay. Kuntak means intellectual. It means if I ask you, are things the way you think they are? Until you reach the path of seeing, until you see emptiness directly, you have to say, I guess so. Okay. I guess things are probably the way I see them. But once you've seen emptiness directly and you've come out and you've entered Jetho Vyeshi, and someone comes up to you and says, are things the way you see them? You have to say what? Absolutely not. Okay. Do you still see them as self-existent? Absolutely. I always say it's like Jason tied to the mast. This is the story of the Argonauts. And they're about to enter the land of the Sirens. They're on a ship. And on the beach there's these ladies who sing this beautiful song. And the sailors all get excited and they row into the rocks and kill themselves, you know. Or the Sirens catch them. So Jason says, you guys put wax in your ears, tie me to the mast, and ignore whatever I say. Like if I gesticulate to you and like, you know, row this way, just ignore me, okay? So it's this schizophrenic state of mind. It's a schizophrenia like that. You know that what you are seeing from the moment you come out of the direct perception of emptiness is wrong. You know that you are once again seeing everything in a mistaken manner. Okay. But you don't believe it. Okay. You know that you're doing it, but you don't believe yourself. Okay. You no longer believe that what you're seeing is correct. You know that your perceptions are screwy. And you also know that you can't stop yourself right now. And in fact, the day that you do stop, jikta senge, say jikta senge, the inherent tendency to grasp to things as self-existent, as not being just your projection, the day you overcome that, you reach nirvana. That is the last mental affliction that you have to finish. That is nirvana. The day you overcome that, roughly at the 8th bodhisattva level, you reach nirvana. The day that you no longer think things are the way, the day you no longer see them as self-existent, that you overcome the inherent tendency to see them as self-existent, is the day you reach nirvana. That's the end of Goma. Okay. Mostly. Even bugs, even amoebas, even grasshoppers, even Vajrapani blue jays have jikta senge. Okay. Even animals have the inherent tendency to see things as self-existent. Okay. All beings that haven't reached the end of that have that. Okay. One last thing. And this is very important. Let me make sure it's the last thing. I shouldn't stick you with any homework answers. I didn't come. Oh, I left that one thing. The fact that you're still seeing things as self-existent, on Gomlam, okay, on the fourth path, the fact that you are still seeing them as self-existent, but you know you're wrong, and you don't believe yourself anymore, that's called Gyumatabu. Say Gyumatabu. Gyumatabu. I want to leave. Don't erase that, okay? That'll be nice. Really, leave it for a day, okay? Gyuma means illusion. Tabu means like an illusion. Gyumatabu. In Tibetan? Say, Gyuma? Tabu. Gyuma Tabu. That's illusion. Things are illusory. That's the meaning when Buddhists say things are an illusion. And you don't know what it means until you get there. And that's the only meaning of illusion. When we say illusory, Gyuma Tabu, this is what it means. It does not mean that nothing exists. I'm up here talking to you. If I didn't exist, you couldn't hear me. It does not mean that things don't exist. It especially doesn't mean that you can do whatever the hell you want. Okay? It doesn't mean good and bad are an illusion. Nirvana and samsara are illusions. You know, evil and good are illusions. Suffering and paradise are an illusion. So I can do whatever I want. It's all the same anyway. It's all an illusion, you know. It absolutely doesn't mean that, okay? Absolutely lokta, wrong view, poison view, disservice to humanity to say things like that, okay? It doesn't mean that at all. Gyumatabu means illusory in the sense that things still look self-existent to you, but you know you're wrong. Okay? That's Gyumatabu. Did I miss anything else? Oh, there's one. Give you the Tibetan word for renunciation, okay? It's called Ngenjum. I'll stick it here, okay? Ngenjum means renunciation. Renunciation. Say Ngenjum. This is short for Nyepa Juma. Nyepa Juma means to definitely come out. Definitely come out. That's the literal meaning of it. Definitely come out. And in one sense, it refers to giving up the worldly life. Okay? Giving up the worldly life. That's one meaning of renunciation.